Amen.
Okay, so it's not the mainstream here, but Nova usually finds itself in these occasions that under some enlightening, and I'm happy to present what we are doing now. In a way, I think if we're talking about simulations in 1As, so it's interesting to see what's going on in the Nova, because it's maybe a bit simpler. And I'll show you that within the years we found out that it's not the same. And this is the main issue here. Just, I don't want to block. Okay, so what was in the past, and just one or two slides. It started with dimensional analysis somewhere in the 80s, early 80s. People probably remember by Chara's view of what's going on. He just forgot convection. I left this picture here because it might still be relevant about early perturbations. It's a question that is not solved. What happens with early perturbations? And before convection sets in, and we'll come back to it later, but people should keep it in mind. The other approach was the approach that was bidimensional analysis, and people had in mind that there is some kind of flame that is propagating, like in the 1As, and I think we know now it's not the case, but it's interesting that that's what people had in mind, and there is no evidence for it, and now thinking about it, really I don't know where it came from. Because once you start doing the calculations, you see that here this is not the case. Although it might be that really very early that might be something like this, but the dimensions, the time scales, everything is not in favor of such a view that people had before they started making the calculations. What was done, and this is the one thing that is really showing what was done in the past. So I think the first, and they should be mentioned, were Shankar and Arnett. They tried, the codes were not big enough, the time was not big enough, and they didn't have enough resolution, and they started with very big perturbations. So what they got is, they got a small perturbation that floated up, and that's it, and they stopped. Later on, we and the group from Kalking made on the same profile calculations, and we published it in the late 90s. I'll go back to it later. Later on, the Chicago group with the FLASH started to work also with PPM on shear mixing on white dwarfs, and they had a paper or two. So concerning what was done in 2D and 3D, the only work in 3D was the Garkin group work, and I think that it deserves more work because there are open questions here, and I'll get into it later. The intimate relation between physics and numerics here is quite evident, although it seems that straightforward simulations are well done here, except always if you ask what is happening on the small scales, and the small scales here are questionable, whether they are important or not.
Can you explain the acronyms, PPM, ALE?
Yeah, okay, so this is for experts, and PPM is a peaceful parabolic. This has to do with the hydrodynamics. Within the time, I won't get into the details. For the experts, it's I'll get...
Piecewise parabolic method of Paul Gilbert.
And the ALE, that's the alternative arbitrary Lagrange Eulerian. I'll get into it a bit when I get to my calculations, but I think there are a few experts here. If it's needed, I think an hour talk will be, for those that are not living it every moment, will be important.
Yeah. So just to set the record straight, the flash calculations,
yeah,
of the shear mixing, that's a gravity resonant wave.
Right? Yeah, yeah. I'll, sorry.
It's nothing to do with shear in terms as we understand this. you know, Kelvin temples and so on.
That's it. That's right. That's
but
right.
But very high shear loss.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I think that the main issue that came from the first works was that the problem is really predicting the mixing, and mixing in Nova is important, and I'll get into it in a moment. What do you see? In a Nova, I have Jim's paper with Mario from the past. You see that you have quite big amounts of oxygen, carbon, helium. The hydrogen is much lower than solar. We know that the accreted matter is solar. We know that the temperatures and densities are such that you don't burn higher than helium, and therefore the carbon, oxygen, that and neon magnesium that you get out of a nova in the ejecta should come from the white dwarf, and therefore the mixing mechanism is important then. Especially when you think about it, that injecting CNO elements into the burning hydrogen is enhancing the burning, so it has an observational role versus what is seen, and it has a dynamical and energetic role concerning the runaway, its strength, the hydrodynamics, everything that goes on. So mixing is important here, and mixing is tricky, especially when you're working with the Eulerian codes and you have the advection terms, and you always don't know the competition between physics and the numerical advection, and this is the trick here. I have another one, and I found on the web recently another one, and here it's interesting. The amount of enrichment is much smaller than in the past. I don't know. I don't get into this argument. The observers should get into it. Jim, what do you say? Where is he? About the numbers here, they are much smaller than in the past. Something like 15% and not 30%, and even less, between 10 and 15%. And it's very, very fast novas. I really don't know. I don't want to get into it. Okay, I get into the mechanism. I'm a theoretician. Okay. So there were three mechanisms that were proposed in the past, and I don't know about many more. Shear-induced, I get the shear-induced, I call it generally, I agree with you, it's the resonance between the wind and the gravity waves. Okay, so diffusion were Priyanik and Kovach, Ibn and Fujimoto and McDonald had papers in the past. The shear-induced way in the past, Kippenan and Thomas, McDonald, the Flash team in Chicago. All those that come out from the circulation of the matter. And the undershoot convection was proposed by Woosley in 86 in a paper he had, and both groups in Jerusalem and Garking were working on it. I don't know anybody else that published, at least. I know that in Chicago you're trying, and I hope within time we'll be able to compare results. The diffusion, I'll say a few words about the diffusion. It takes place on the longest time scales, the accretion time scale. And it mixes, and that's important, once the envelope becomes unstable to convection, much before the runaway. Much before the runaway, if you count it on timescales of the beta decay time. The beta decay time is something like 100 seconds. And it's important, because once you are within a beta decay time, you capture all the protons on the carbon, and then you restrict your reaction rates. So mixing in a nova takes place, if you are talking about diffusion, takes place when the temperature is something like 30, 40 million, I'll show you in a minute, 30, 40 million degrees, whereas the runaway times come to be comparable with something like 100 seconds only when the temperature is 10 to the 8, and then it takes something like between a few hours and a day to raise the temperature between 60 million and 100 million, and therefore the mixing takes place with the diffusion mechanism prior to the runaway. The amount of mixing, naturally, once you are talking with about diffusion, is depends on the accretion rate. And I don't know about a survey that shows really the any correlation between the amount of mixing and the accretion rate that might be a proof that this is the mechanism that is working. Although it's sure enough there is a diffusion there, and it should be considered, and the mechanism looks very reasonable, and I think the question here is the relative importance of each of the mechanisms and not each of them by itself. And again, what people claim is that they get the observed amount of enrichment. I just show you from Prialnik's paper from 86 that that's the mass of the envelope, and that's the CNO profiles, and you see that prior to the this is the cut between the carbon oxygen core and the hydrogen rich envelope. And you see what happened with diffusion, but once convection sets in, you see you get a jump. And from what the information she gives there in the paper, you see that already here that you already have a jump in the composition. It's the temperature is something like 30, 40 million degrees far before the runaway. So also for this mechanism, the mixing takes place prior to runaway. The only mechanism that the mixing takes place within the runaway is the undershoot mechanism. Okay, here you have it. with justice. Okay, I'll let you read it. And Lars is right. The numbers they got that gives really mixing that is going on with what you observe, you need shear velocities that are approaching the sound velocity, and this is the half of it or something like this. And this is not really reasonable, taking into account that the densities there are quite high. You are quite deep into the envelope. Okay, this is a nice plot that they had from their paper in 2003. Okay, the new models. So now we are into the talk. Why do we need more work? Okay, the initial model we were working, we wanted to do something. So we started as close as possible to the runaway. The initial model at the earliest stages, close to the onset of convection. That's what we want to get. I'll show you in a minute why. We wanted to test what happens to early perturbations. Remember Shara's paper. And we had a resolution problem. The resolution was not nice, and I'll show you in a minute why. The Garfin group had a much better resolution, and they are the only one also that compared to the results did some kind of convergence test. We didn't have enough computational power to do it. Resolution is important because if you are talking about shear velocities from the convection that are those that are responsible for the mixing, then open Chandrasekhar's book and you'll find out the linear analysis, and you'll see that there is a limit wavelength. And if you take the velocities, the convective velocities, the maximal convective velocities that you get in 1D, let's say, model for convection that are something like 100 kilometers per second, and you take the acceleration, and you take the density ratio between the carbon oxygen and the hydrogen, so you get that the limiting wavelength is something about 10 kilometers. So as long as your zoning is closer than that, it's hard to say that you resolve really the instability, and therefore we had to go to finer zones. And in the former paper, we were only somewhere like somewhere here, and only in the new paper we get close to it. We get zoning that are something like 1 or 2 kilometers in size that is still too big, because you want a few, something like 5-6 zones for each wavelength, and if you get only the first one with the 10 zones, so it's not really the issue, and this is something that should be done in the future once we have more computational resources. And again, what I've said, numerical convergence, we didn't do it. The only ones that did it were the Germans. And improving the schemes, I'll talk about it a bit.
I could easily increase the resolution now if I had, again, somebody doing it by easily a factor of 10 to 20. Yeah. I might even put in the curvature, which was left out in our case to get periodic boundary conditions. I could put that in now easily with the new machines.
Okay, so what was the problem?
I'm doing it.
Sorry.
Everybody wants to do supernovae, nobody wants to do novae anymore.
That's why we're all here.
Okay. Okay. I hope I'll show you that there are things to be done. Okay, so what was the problem with the profile? You see the temperature here, it's an old one, but I show it. This is the temperature. This is the jump in the temperature. It's close to the runaway. You see the jump in the density. Numerics don't like these things. And you see the jump in the abundances. That is the reason for everything. And again, as you can expect, the pressure is smooth and continuous. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been in a hydrostatic equilibrium. Now, the reasoning behind what we were doing says that you can't do all the evolution in multi-dimensions. So as long as there is no convection, there's no real reason to think that multidimensional effects will be that important. Once you get into the convective instability, the instability should be followed by a multidimensional code, and if it's 3D, it's better, but all what we have is 2D. And therefore, you want to go as much as possible back to the beginning of the convective stage in order to say that, oh, here I'm starting to be reasonable, and although even there you'll have this jump, you have some jump because you'll have a discontinuity in the abundances, and I showed you that even if you are working with diffusion, once convection sets on, you'll have the jump, so you can't avoid it, and it's a problem that I really don't know how to tackle. Okay, so this is the reasoning for going back. Just for those that are not, again, leaving the simulations every day, I just want to make sure that we are all talking on the same grounds. So this is the star. This is the carbon, oxygen, or neon magnesium core. The dimensions are about something like 5,000 kilometers, and another 1,000 kilometers is the envelope. And we are working in cylinder coordinates, so we have an axis of rotation. This is the axis. And what we are simulating is a part of the envelope that includes the hydrogen-rich material with some of the core material. So this, you see these plots, but you have to think about this. And it's this is the symmetry. Okay, I won't get into the details. Again, the grid is now, as I told you, much better, but it's still not enough because you have something like 5 zones per one wavelength. The details are, again, for the experts, not for everybody around. I just wanted to show you that really, we also already showed it in the first paper, if you take aqueous abundance lines of carbon, you see them wiggle here, and that's probably because of the shear velocity, and probably this is the reason for the mixing. Just I'll show you it a bit later with details. This is the old resolution, this is the new resolution, and you see that the zones are much nicer and much finer in the new resolution. Again, the importance, I was talking about the numerical schemes. The nova produces energy and the envelope expands. If you're working Eulerian and you're keeping your regime of computation to be the one you started with, within that before you get to the peak of the runaway, most of the matter will sneak out. Therefore, you need to work some kind of a combination between Eulerian and Lagrangian. That's what we call effective Lagrangian or ALE. ALE gives you the choice to make the hydrostep in a Lagrangian way, and then to remap by an Eulerian step with an advection term into a new grid, and therefore you're expanding within time because you have the circular motion of the matter, and therefore you have to do it. Still, we keep the outer radius equal for all zones. We keep all the transversal zones in the same place, and we are changing only the radial zone. So, transversally, we are almost Eulerian all the time. Radially, we have some Lagrangian effects. What did we do? We wanted to go down with the temperature at the peak of the hydrogen layer in order to go as far back to the point where convection sets on. Convection sets on when the temperature is something like 30 million. So therefore we had to go much farther back. We started, I told you, the first model we showed in the papers was T10. It was 100 million. We managed to do 90, 70, and with 50 we had some troubles, and I'll show you the results. So these are the results. What you see here is the log of the energy production rate we in ergs per second, and here you see the time. In the next line I'll also tell you why these numbers are reasonable and what's the meaning of them. But what you see here is time in seconds. You see the one with 90 million degrees almost immediately goes into the runaway. The 70 million takes quite time, but it also goes to the runaway. And within the time we had, the 50 million is increasing, but not that good. So we shifted it. Once you shift this graph here, you get some kind of universality, and this encouraged us very much because it shows that our numerics are quite well. If you do it for the three of them, you do see that the two really converge very nicely from here on, and this one, if we could continue, probably would go this way, although I can't sign on it. But it shows good signs that all three are at least don't contradict each other, and the convergence seems quite well. Yeah. Yeah, it's according to my eye.
Right. Now, just to make sure.
So once it left around
200
seconds.
The computer fell and I had to restart the job, and this is some numerical noise that I had there. Okay. This shows you something about the accuracy of the results. That's no question. Okay. What you can see from here, that the energy production rate is quite a good parameter, because you see that they all follow the same trend. So it seems to be a good control parameter, and you check along the time, you say, okay, this is the physical parameter, now let's see what's happened here, what happens here at the integer values of the logarithm of the energy production rate, and compare the models. And another magic number that you have to remember, that if we're talking about a nova, whether it's a fast nova or something like that, you need to, within a dynamical time, to invest into the envelope something like the binding energy within a dynamical time. And once you get to 10 to the 45 ergs per second, so the energy production rate times a few seconds, that is the dynamical time, is the binding energy of the envelope, and then you know that you have a nova. Okay, so the numbers are fine. Okay, so this is the overall picture, and these are the simulations. You see in the beginning, this is the abundance of the carbon 12, you see the big numbers are what you have down there, and it's more than 0.2, but just because the column BEP, I had to go only to 0.2, but you see this is the carbon rich, and half of the mass is here and half of the mass is here because of the density gradient. So there is a lot of mass here, but quite a few mass here. And you see that's 10 to the 42, 10 to the 43, 10 to the 44, and 10 to the 45. And you see that within time you have more and more mixing, you see the flame, you get the notion of what's going on.
This is the image chart, it's a 2D simulation.
Yeah,
so
this is
the vortices running? They're running in the board.
Yeah. Okay. And this is the velocity. I didn't want to put them together because then you block. So you see the velocities are here are quite small in the beginning, something like 10 to the 6, 10 to the 7 centimeters per second. And here, at the end, you get to velocities that are almost 10 to the 8, and it's still something like 30% sonic. Always subsonic. Always subsonic. It's amazing to look at no pressure wave at any time. The pressure is almost hydrostatic all the time. Here you can see the details of the nuclear burning. And to the details. Okay, so if you're talking about the details, it's interesting to see that we are quite converged. If you look at the two models, so the black is the 90 million and the red is the 70 millions, and you can compare them according to the control parameters. So this is when it's 10 to the 42, 10 to the 44, and 10 to the 45. And you see that they are quite, it's quite amazing to see that the energy production rate, this is, just I have to explain, what we are doing is we are averaging laterally on each zone. On what's happening, I'll go one back. We are taking the lateral average on any radius, and we are plotting the averages. So therefore you get here the according to the mass coordinate, what is the average at this mass, and you can see that from the jump on, the convergence is quite nice. And even at the runaway, we get almost the same profile. If you go to the temperature, there is a slight change. You see that the one with less, with that evolved less time goes to higher temperatures, but it's something like 10%. If you compare the abundances, and this is the most important part of it, you see that here it starts quite different, because the 90 millions evolves for a very short time, the 70 millions evolves for a much longer time until you get the 10 to the 42, if you remember. And therefore, it has a bit more mixing, and you see it here, it's something like 10% the difference, and probably 10-50%, and probably this has to do with the numerics and the details, but all of them, once you get to the runaway, they converge quite nice to the same amounts. And I'll get back to it. Now I'll jump a bit because I don't want to be too long. Okay. These are tests that we did, and I'll skip them. I want to get it. The question that is asked is really whether we have any observational evidence to whatever mechanism is operating in the mixing, because we know there is a mixing, and whether it's really important. And these are two questions that should be dealt with. What I can show here is some interesting feature of the Andertschul mechanism that is not anywhere else, and I'm not sure that it really has an observation effect, because with the resolution that we have here and the fact that we don't follow the runaway all the way, it's hard to tell. But I'll show you, it's interesting physically. So here you have these averages at various energy production rates. This is the this is the log Q, this is the specific Hertz per gram per second profile according to the mass coordinate. And as we know, because of the beta decay, once you start to run away, and if you don't have that many carbon in there, each carbon, as I was saying, is catching a proton, and you have a limit. And this is a limit that is well known and quoted, that the energy production rate goes according to the amount of enrichment that you have. If you look here, once you approach the runaway, so from 10 to the 44 on, I'm plotting here the ratio between, the logarithm of the ratio between the actual rates that we got and the limit that you got here. And the limit is always scaled according to the enrichment that you do have physically at that stage, not that you began with. And you see that what happens is, because you are bringing from down below at a rate that is faster than the beta decay carbon, you are able to increase the reaction rates by almost 1.5 order of magnitude. Now, this have two effects. First of all, the temperatures can go much higher because you are putting into it the energy much faster. And it also can change the abundances, but the densities are quite small, so I really don't know. It won't make the change from passing to burning only to helium and passing over helium. That it won't make. It might make a change in the small change in the abundance ratios, and it should be checked carefully. So this is one feature that I wanted to do. Okay, discussion at the end. So, universality. I showed you the universality. I want to show it again for all the tests that we made. You see here, the numerical tests, the runs for different temperatures. Once you shift them, all of them converge into a universal line. From here on, all models went all along the same way. And with perturbations, I'll get back in a minute into the perturbations because they are interesting. Perturbations, just a second. This is something that should be talked about. The times are such that you can't think that everything is spread immediately. So if you have a small perturbation because of convection, the question is how, at early stages, how does it develop within time? And I show you here the time scales. So if you are talking, let's say, this is a 1D diagram, and this is when the temperature is 10 to the 8, somewhere here at the runaway. And if you are talking, let's say, somewhere here about a temperature fluctuation of 5%, it gets you something like a few hours or even more earlier at this place. So the question is, what will happen concerning a 1D model? And we wanted to test it, and we did it. You see here we perturbed a small region that is a part of a convective cell. You see what's happened within time, and there are two features that should be looked upon. The first is that you have a dynamical effect, but it is a small one. It's not something huge. You see a sound wave, I would say, that goes out. The convections continue everywhere else. You see exactly the wave that comes from the perturbation. And with the time, what happens, it runs all over with the sound crossing time that is something like 2-3 seconds. But then there is also a wave that goes with the mixing on a longer time scale. This is something like 10 seconds later. And this one also goes all over. In order to resolve it, it's tough. We didn't do it, but it starts resembling what Shara was talking about. And therefore, I think it should be taken care of. And if people are thinking what to do, maybe to go very early and to see what's happening there.
Isn't that more of a geographic wave through the
Yeah, but still, it the question is whether it will manage to do something or not. Probably it won't, but it's not the initial sound where it went. The acoustic goes out. Yeah, the acoustic goes. Yeah. And I noticed it. It's not an essential part here, but it made me think that we should test it more carefully with better numerics. Okay, back to the conclusions.
So, why do you say that goes back to Sharrat's model? I mean, the Sharrat's model assumes that there are explosions already, so you assume that...
No, concerning the fact that you have something very local that is starting distributing. All this view of a wave that goes on, what happens to it? I don't believe it, but I can't say now for sure there is nothing like this under any circumstances.
But you put that by hand.
Yeah, I put, but there are fluctuations there. The fluctuation is not big. I increased the temperature from 70 million to 90 million. That's all. And I mixed. That's the only perturbation I had. Okay. How far back can we go? Okay, this is a computational problem, so I won't get into it. I do want to get to understanding the origin for the universality. Where is it? Why don't I have it? I lost. Oh, here it is. So what we have done, the origin, I assume the origin for the universality comes from the mixing, and we know that the mixing enhances the burning. And here what you see is the energy production rate versus the amount of mixing for a one-zone model. And you see that when the initial temperature, you start when the temperature is 50 million and you have up to 19 million degrees. This is 15 million, this is 19 million, and you see that there's first of all, when the temperature rises, you see that it is quite enormous, the 4 or 5 orders of magnitude just because of the temperature. But you see that at higher temperature, what happens is that if you mix something like 1 or 2%, something between 1 or 2%, you have at the highest temperature, the enhancement goes from 10 to the 14 to a few times 10 to the 16. So there's a huge enhancement because of the mixing, only for smart mixing. And that shows you how tricky the computations are, because you have to be accurate with the mixing, otherwise you miss all of it. And if you look at the ratio between the maximal burning rate with mixing versus the maximal burning rate for solar abundances, you see that once you pass something like 100 million, you get a great increase. It goes by orders of magnitude, and probably this is the reason that the nonlinear effect of the mixing, once the runaway goes on, gives you this convergence that gives the universality. Yeah.
In that last figure, you simply enriched at the beginning by the total amount of mixing that you found. Would you reproduce this curve?
Probably not, because everything will be caught by the, and you again have the limit. So the dynamics here are important. Okay, how far back can we go? And this is the end. It's for our computational resources, it's tough, because you see, in one, I show you the, and you'll see also the effect of the enrichment in the same place. For an initial model of 90 million degrees, that's the base temperature. For solar abundance in 1D, the runaway, the physical time for runaway is 3,000 seconds. Once it's enriched in 1D, it's 800 seconds. So it's something like 4 times shorter. And in 2D, it took 150 seconds. And it was something like 600,000 time steps. For the T7 model, in 1D, it's 26,000 seconds. If you enrich it, it's almost an order of magnitude shorter. And with 2D, that was the time. and it was something like 2 million steps, and you know that you lose the currency with the time. The 50 million for 1D, it takes always something like a few days, and if it's enriched, it's a few hours, and we computed it for 1,700 seconds, and it was already 7 million. It will take, that's the estimate, it will take, we computed only for 500. It will take something like, I assume, something like 1,700, and it will be 7 million, and I don't believe in the accuracy of such a long computation, and therefore we didn't go that, because if you start when convection sets on, you have to do a computation for something like 5 years in 1D, or something like a few months in once it's enriched, and it's not in our capability, and it's a question whether it can be done, and this is a question on all these calculations once you want to go that far back.
Well, of course it can be done, but you have to take a different hydro code. There are these unelastic or low Mach number codes around.
Okay,
they don't have all this problem. So I really wonder why nobody in the Nova community grabs one of those codes and does it again now, going over the...
I'll tell you one thing.
So we have experience with low Mach number flow codes, and you will quickly learn that the gains are not as large as you anticipated before taking on this project.
But for the Nova case, I think that's an Eiger case.
And the problem that you have, the gains are moderate, because there is a balance between the gain on the current times and the loss on the actually algorithmic implementation that you have. So you will find gains anything between 10 to 20 when it comes to speed up.
No, but
and that's what you said.
I'll tell you what my...
We heard a talk yesterday using the unelastic codes for stellar convection, and we learned that they can run many, many overturns and over almost secular time scales in stellar convection for A-star convection and all this. And so why shouldn't that be... This was in 3D. And so if one, say, would go to 2D and do a similar problem with one of the unelastic codes, I would bet you can gain...
I think you are right, but I'll tell you what's my reasoning. Yeah. I have two arguments. First of all, you do something to the physics with the unelastic codes. So in order to be sure that they are doing well, you have to compare it with something that didn't neglect anything. So it should be done both ways and compared, first of all. Now, my impression, it's only impression, I don't have more than it, is that what I read about people that did convection with the unelastic codes, at least they write that they get much less undershoot. Ronald Tam had it in the X-ray bursts, and I read a few papers also about things that are relevant for the sun and for the novas, and people quote such kind of things, and I really don't know what is the truth, but we have to get into it and test it.
At least it's not in our code.
We can do it implicitly and compare it also. Yeah, that's also why. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, so then we're going to take a 5-minute break.